prize. We start with two much-loved actors playing people who have little love for each other.
I had rather hear my dog bark at a crow than a man swear he loves me.
God keep your ladyship still in that mind, so some gentleman or other shall scape a predestinate scratched face.
Scratching could not make it worse than 'twas such a face as yours
were. Well, you are a rare parrot.
A bird of my tongue is better than a beast of yours.
I would my horse had the speed of your tongue and so good a continuer. But keep your way. In God's name, I have done.
David Tennant and Catherine Tate as Beatrice and Benedict, who love the single life as much as they hate each other, until their sharp tongues are tricked into a kiss in Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. J.C. Rourke's production in modern dress, with the songs in the text given rock settings, takes place in the early 1980s in a Mediterranean port visited by British sailors. A certain ado has been made in the media about the fact that this London West End production unites two leading TV stars. But while the box office will certainly be swelled by fans of his Doctor Who and her The Catherine Tate Show, both performers have substantial theatrical credentials. He was a recent Hamlet for the RSC, while she has just appeared at the National Theatre in Alan Ayckbourn's Season's Greetings. Earlier this evening, a couple of hours before they went on stage at the Wyndham's Theatre, I talked to Catherine Tate and David Tennant and mentioned that watching the play last night, I'd been struck that the audience behaved unusually for a Shakespearean production, whooping and cheering the insults between the reluctant lovers.
The audiences have been lovely so far, yeah. It's interesting that I think of all Shakespeare's comedies, this is the most contemporaneous one, and certainly this is a contemporary production. Broadly speaking, so I think perhaps it seems to be connecting in a way that obviously one hopes for when you do these old texts. You hope that they'll live anew, but you're always a bit nervous about it until you get out of the rehearsal room. But it seems to be working, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Catherine, it does feel very modern, as David says, particularly in the cruelty of it, because every time I see it, I'm struck. There's always a trick going on, either tricking people into falling in love or at one point tricking, pretending that somebody's dead when they're not. There's a great, although it's a comedy, there's a great deal of cruelty in it.
I know. I mean, the conceit of actually saying to someone, pretend your daughter's dead, and then we'll get the man who jilted her to marry her in the guise of her cousin that no one's ever spoken about. It's quite a big ask and a very cruel thing to do. Yeah, I mean, I think that probably tops the kind of knavery in the play.
I think that's what's extraordinary about it as a play, isn't it? That it's such a rollicking comedy, and then kind of two-thirds of the way through, it takes such a left turn. I think I'm sure that's part of the reason why it's been such a popular play for so long, because it's unpredictable and rather alarming in that way.
And that astonishing line, the request that Beatrice makes, kill Claudio, mm-hmm. which gets both a laugh and a gasp, because mm-hmm. it is an astonishing thing mm-hmm. to say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
But that must be a good one to do with it, that line.
Yeah, I mean, it's some tricky. I mean, we're just having a conversation about it now. It's a kind of tricky one, because it feels like it's radioactive a little bit, because as you say, it's such an extraordinary thing to say to someone that the response to it from an audience is one of a kind of comical response, because it seems like a ridiculous thing to say. But I suppose we have to root it in, even though we are placing it in a modern setting, we have to root it in its background of 400 years ago. That was a fairly common thing to ask for someone to do, or
certainly legitimate.
Legitimate, yeah. That you could ask to kill someone who had dishonoured your kinswoman.
Also, I think people recognise this, don't they? It's your great dread when you say to someone, "I'm so in love with you, I'll do anything."
Yes,
What if they call you on it?
And then there you go. And also, similarly, for the end of the scene, when having asked someone to do something, they then agree.
Yeah,
and all the consequences that brings.
No, it's fantastic darkness. Now, you say contemporary. It seems we just passed Margaret Thatcher on the stairs. Margaret Thatcher,
yes.
With a beard showing through, and lots of Princess Diana masks. So, is it? It is.
It's not entirely contemporary. It's relatively contemporary.
But it is 80-ish.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I even wondered at one point, idly last night in the interval, if he's actually working on, because they went on the honeymoon to the Mediterranean on the Royal Yacht Britannia, Diana and Charles. And I wondered even if some of these sailors were from that boat.
I think they very much come back from a war. I mean, that's quite explicit in the text of the play. So inevitably, I suppose, you
Could
start to
Falklands,
imagine it's
yeah.
the Falklands, and Gibraltar, which is nominally the notion of where we've set this, was a common stop-off for soldiers coming back from there. So there's a kind of, you know, that's not, you don't necessarily need to understand that to key into the world of the play, but it, I think that was a starting point for us.
The other thing which the audience responding to fantastically, as was I, the physical comedy of it, which we have in various ways. You come on a golf buggy. This is a slight plot spoiler, but it's early
on. It is a bit,
and
yes.
But you went off the edge of the stage last night.
We're still in previews, Mark. Previews, still slightly work in progress. And the golf buggy didn't quite behave itself last night. But we've had a go today, and I think it's all going to be fine.
The other physical, there's a decorating conceit. I don't want to give away too much of this, but there's some fantastic slapstick for both of you, which gets very, very physical.
There is a big stage history with this play,
yeah.
Of the Beatrix and the Benedict Gulling scenes are, you know, that one of the first questions you come to when you come to this place, how are you going to do the Gulling scene?
How are we going to not be hid behind a pot plant?
Yeah, it's the great joy of doing these classical well-known texts. It's also the great burden of them, that your people are coming with an expectation that,
and you have a huge precedent
before
you.
Yeah.
The other thing you have to address is the which words you're going to actually say, because you've got to sort out the text. Now, some things just they just are going to go, I think. For example, Benedict's line, "If I do not love her, I am a Jew." I mean, I think that one these days just disappears.
Yes. It's funny, I'd forgotten that that's the original line, because that was Josie Rourke, our director, and Rob Hasty, the associate director, did a fantastic editing job before we ever turned up, actually. And although that's been an ongoing process in rehearsals, that's never been a line that we've said out loud. I mean, it's, you know, inevitably things age and change over 400 years, and it wouldn't be helpful to have that line in there now. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think Shakespeare would mind the odd emendation.
No, not at all, but more generally, what you've done judicious pruning. So there are those speeches which are, oddly to modern ears, oddly Blackadderish, where they do 15 metaphors for how much they hate they hate each other, and it just mounts up and up. And perhaps maybe you have 8 or 9 of them, but some of those you've cut down a bit.
I guess we have. Again, a lot of that work was done before we got here, so then you
don't miss it.
You don't miss it.
Because
yeah,
it was what we started with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I suppose if I went back and reread the entire text, my memory would be jogged.
Yes.
Of things that, you know, because I know there's the whole bird bath thing that we've cut from the beginning of it. But having said that, I spoke to Tamsin Gregg quite recently, and obviously she did it at the RSC, and she said, "We cut all that because," she said, "I clearly didn't understand it." And Marianne Elliott said to her after about 50 shows, Marianne Elliott said to her, "You don't understand that, do you, what you're saying?" She went, "No." And she went, "Oh, cut it, I'm sick of you." So they cut it, and it was very helpful to hear that somebody else, you know.
I think it's pretty rare to have a Shakespeare play done verbatim now.
Yeah, I think you can't.
And this isn't one of the longest, but if we did every word, we'd certainly still be here at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
But it's part of a general approach, which I like. That it's faster, isn't it? I mean, and you do it conversationally. There, as we know, well-known directors who stand there in the rehearsal room beating out the meter. But you do it much more relaxed.
I think this play asks for that as well, though, because there's relatively little meter in it. It's broadly speaking, it's a prose play. I mean, it slips into verse here and there for very specific reasons. But broadly speaking, it's all in prose, so it lends itself perhaps to a more conversational approach. And I think that's certainly something that this particular production has chased in rehearsal as well. And it's fun. It's fun to find the modernity without altering the language, to find ways of making it feel fresh minted, which of course is what you're always chasing with classical texts.
And I'm always struck by how filthy Shakespeare is. I mean, those lines like, "Oh, he has stolen my bird's nest," which could be an ornithological reference, but probably isn't.
I think if you dig far enough into any line, some scholar sometime will have made it a reference to a private part of some variety.
But there are an awful lot of them, and in this play as well, which is correct, because I mean, it's about sex and...
Well, he wrote for the masses, and masses like their knob jokes. So, you know, it's a grand tradition. can I say that on Radio 4 at 7:30?
No. Yeah, go on. You've said it now. The the obvious difference from TV is that you can change all the time and you can vary it. But to what extent, I mean, obviously you're in previews now, so you're varying it anyway. Mm. But looking back, say, you've just done seasons, Greetings, Catherine, you did Hamlet recently. To what extent do you take the opportunity to vary it from night to night?
I think it's ongoing, isn't it? Obviously,
in previews
at the moment, that's the point of them. Yeah. You want to try things out. You want, particularly with the comedy, I guess, because what seems funny in a rehearsal room isn't necessarily funny on stage, and other things will surprise you with the reaction they get. So you're playing with that as you go. And
I think one of the important things to do is also, as you go, to let go of things that you might be. Married to, but if the audience aren't going with you, you've just got to be guided by them.
Because you do know, don't you? Which you don't in television necessarily. You don't know what whether people are laughing or not at home.
Well, absolutely, you've got an instant, the instant gratification and the instant shock and sadness if they're not quite getting
shame.
It. And shame, the wave of shame that comes across.
And the flip side of this, which is the obvious difference from TV, is doing it 7-8 times a week and right through the summer when other people are jetting off to the Med and all that kind of thing. Do you ever resent that? The repetition of theatre?
Oh!
We're in a pretty limited run, actually. It's not like we're doing it for... It's not like we're in the mousetrap.
I think it's a bit like like giving birth. Not that I've done that, but that sense that, like, at the moment, every night is so fresh and we're so raw, and the terror is so present in getting through it. And yes, I think by the end of a run, that does feel different, and repetition is something that you have to fight against slightly. But I think when you start each new play again, you kind of forget that side of it, because you can only be in the moment of discovering the performance for the first time.
It is perhaps the plan of the producers that you might bring in different audiences to Shakespeare and so on. Do you think about any of that, or do you just get on with it?
I don't think we do. I mean, it's interesting, a lot of people say that, so there must be something in it. We just wanted to do the play and are doing it, and are delighted that people are coming.
I mean, I suppose because a lot of people will come to see it, maybe because they know of us from other things. But ultimately, we're not really in control of who gets the tickets. Mm. And if an entire new audience come into the theatre, then obviously that's brilliant. But.
And we're talking, you're on stage, so we'll go in a moment, but you're on stage in about 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Probably as this is transmitting,
So rituals, do you have any of that for the theatre? I mean, we're in your dressing room where you have various bits of nibbles.
Well, we've got chickens waiting to be sacrificed.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Joke all the chicken rearers or lovers.
And I'd just like to point out, we're in my dressing room. We don't share a dressing room. We share many things. But that would perhaps be too close.
Do you have any? What do you do? So, I mean, obviously, it's previews, so it's not exactly.
Yeah, the rituals haven't quite developed themselves yet.
Do you have any grilled chicken at 5:30, that kind of stuff, or anything? Grilled chicken at 5:30 or a mile start.
That's not far
10 minutes before you go on.
Yeah, but 5:30 is about right. Not necessarily grilled chicken, but often. No. Oh, I don't know.
No. I've decided I might join in the vocal warm up with a Sigh No More. Getting everyone to sing Sigh No More.
Oh, right.
That might be nice. Yeah.
No, we have our own
Sign
No
More.
You have your own one?
Yeah. Sign No More is the song that is actually
in. It's in the You've Got Yours, haven't you?
Yes.
Nevis, that's one of the striking things about this production. All the Hey Nonny Nonny stuff, the songs have been set.
Yeah.
They're rocky and quite surprising.
Yes, but all the words are by Shakespeare.
No, they're all his, I know. So,
and we even the songs that play in the background are purloined from other plays. I think we've got Lover and His Last from As You Like It, and we've got something from Twelfth Night in there. Yes, all set to appropriate
various Wham-inspired beats.
Yes.
David Tennant and Catherine Tate. Much Ado About Nothing, which has the feel of a huge popular hit, is booking until September 1st at the Wyndham's Theatre in London.